All right, this is the New Glarus Brewing Podcast with Dan Carey. Dan is on assignment. He is out in Northern California, I think, looking at some material for beer and brewing. So we're very happy today to have two employees of the brewery. We have Chad Sarzinski and Jesse Johnsrud. How are you guys doing today?
Doing good. Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, doing good. Thanks.
Hey, Chad, did I pronounce your name correctly?
You did.
I did.
Perfect.
I got it. That's awesome. I was reading it when I was on the way over here, and I was like, all right, I'm definitely going to have to ask him how to pronounce his name.
It has messed up a few people over the years. I know that. I feel bad for my kids.
Well, it's better than me. I have two monosyllabic names. First name Scott, last name May. It's just, there's no musicality to it whatsoever. It's very, very Celtic and very brutal.
Simple.
Yes, exactly. So I like to start off when we have sort of employees on the podcast to have you guys sort of explain where you guys work in the brewery. So I guess we'll start with Jesse. Jesse, what is your job here at New Glarus?
So my job here at New Glarus is a production brewer. I also fill in as backup team lead to Tammy Hansen, the brew house team leader. But the job entails essentially receiving raw materials such as malt, hops, and we manage water. You pretty much put them all together through the mashing, lautering, boiling, and wort cooling steps and produce the base of the beer.
So essentially your department's in charge of just of organizing all the raw materials and then using those beautiful copper kettles we have here at Hilltop to create the wort. Is that pretty much correct?
Yep. And essentially, you know, Dan and folks will come up with a thought on a recipe. Sometimes we'll brew it on our pilot system, the little 5-gallon system. And then sometimes we'll just go for it. And, you know, we're following a recipe. Sometimes you have to make tweaks along the way, but for the most part, usually we're pretty close out of the gate.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. And Chad, how about you?
Yeah, I work in the cellar department. So we basically handle the beer on the cold side of the brewing process. So anything post boil, we work with yeast a lot. We do all the yeast starting after the lab gets it prepped. We do any of the dry hopping, all the centrifuging, it's very interesting. I a funny story is I remember when I applied, I had asked Dan if I could work in the brew hall because I wanted to make beer, and he he told me, "Well, son, the beer gets made in the cellar." So I've kind of taken that to heart, and I'm real proud of working in the department I have.
Well, that's, you know, that's really interesting to me, because of the different, like how beer is made, sort of these steps, these different components and departments of it, whether it's, the hot side of boiling in the mash to create the wort, the cellaring side where, and I'm glad you're here because this was one of the sides of the process I know very little about. To me, when I hear, oh yeah, they're in the cellar, like I just picture people like, you know, sitting on chairs looking at tanks going, yep, they're. They're aging. There they are. Yeah. But it does seem like it's a little more involved than that. In the cellar, how much of it is sort of timing, waiting to transfer it over, and how much of it is like the work of dry hopping and doing that back end stuff?
I would say most of it's timing. Like we're always just looking at time frames for when yeast needs to come off of tanks. Even dry hopping itself is a timing thing. We're waiting for the beer to reach a certain degrees Play-Doh to dry hop. Our whole world kind of revolves around timing when things are ready. It's a whole lot of hurry up and wait.
Yeah. So many things kind of are in this world. It's really funny whether it's on production or on packaging or marketing even. It's going to happen in next week or.
Yeah, it's funny Chad says hurry up and wait because the brew house is very much so go, 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 go.
Yeah, and I was going to ask about that when you're working on the sort of the hot side of things on the kettle side of things. What are sort of the nuances you're looking for when you're, for lack of a better word, sort of cooking the beer, I guess.
You're talking as far as like goals as far as what we're trying to achieve, or?
Yeah. Well, what you're trying to achieve. And then if you, are there things you noticed during the process of like either a, yeah, this thing's sort of going right, or, oh, the, a tweak may need to be made. We'll have to see down the line. Oh, that,
yeah,
sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Typically, you know, like 80% of what we brew is Spotted Cow, and that stays pretty, consistent for us.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, sometimes we have to adjust our malt bill for color and stuff like that. So that way, when the beer, finished beer is out in the market, people ain't getting a darker and then a lighter. And so they're getting the same beer over and over and over.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Like, you know, I was a cook for a good amount of years. It's funny, you can make the same dish 100 times in a day, 1,000 times, you know, in a week. And as you're cooking it, you can sort of feel like, oh, this is going to go a little sideways in this way, or this, yeah. Oh yes, this is right on, right exactly, yeah. Right exactly where I want it. And I always kind of consider, I always conceptualize and sort of make it make sense in my head when I think about what you guys do in that sort of way.
Yeah. And, so in the brew house, pretty much things stay in line fairly well. 'Cause the Hilltop Brewery is what I would call a loaded Cadillac.
Yeah.
Riverside down here, it's, you know, still a good car, is an analogy, I suppose, but there's a lot less bells and whistles.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also funner because it's more hands-on. You're not relying on sensors and automation. It's more touch and feel. So
yeah, like, yeah, up at the Hilltops, like, it's the late model. That car came out last year.
Yeah.
Down here, it's you're riding in a classic Cadillac. Yeah. You got the AM/FM radio. Yeah. And there's going to be some bumps along the way, but ultimately, it's a different experience from with working, is what I'm gathering.
Yep, and that's leading to your original question. Down here, we see a little more variability where we have to make adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
But at Hilltop, it's pretty straightforward, and the system runs really well. So.
And do you work down here? We're at Riverside right now. Do you work down here at Riverside as well, Chad?
Very occasionally, mainly yeah. During the COVID situation. You know, mm-hmm. We were kind of split a lot, so we got a lot of time down here. But the crew is a lot smaller. You know, we're primarily at Hilltop now, as far as my team.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. Where most of the cellaring is probably happening up there. There are giant that is. Is that what, I know the fermentation tanks are in the big barns. Is that part of the cellar team, or is that a completely different thing?
Yeah, no, all the barns you see at Hilltop, those contain all of our fermentation tanks. So we have 39 closed unitank fermenters and then two open top vice tank fermenters. And those are all kind of the responsibility of the cellar department.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have 8 bright beer tanks in those barns as well. And yeah, our job is primarily looking after the beer that's in those tanks and then the cleaning of the tanks when they get emptied.
Yeah, I know. I know the cleaning is a giant, giant priority around here. I often hear Dan say, and then others say that you will not walk through a cleaner brewery than here.
Yep. Well, I have heard multiple people tell me, you know, a real brewer is really just a glorified janitor.
Well, and I think that's a good point. And it's a point I've made on here a few different times. And it's one of the things I'm just really interested in is how people get into brewing. Because I think as something gets popular, as something gets a sort of amount of cultural cachet in it, you see like an influx of people wanting to do it, which is great. You know, more people getting into a thing means the more popular it is, the more secure we all are. But that being said, it is a lot of hard work to be a brewer. You're cleaning things, you're handling raw material that isn't measured in the cup, but measured in the, you know, the tens, if not hundreds of pounds. It's a very physical job. So for you two, and we'll start with you, Jesse, was brewing something you wanted to do and then pursued it? Or is it something you came to and then grew into?
I would say it was something that I came to and grew into. Before I started at the brewery in 2014, I was a cheesemaker for 6 years. So mm-hmm. There's some similarities with CIP and stuff like that. But yeah, I didn't have no experience brewing when I started. But I had experience with, you know, heat exchangers, which are used in the brewery, you know, vessels, you know, you make cheese in a 00 vat. We brew beer in vessels essentially. steam jacketed. But yeah, essentially everything I know related to brewing has come from working here. And right there.
That's all good. That's all good. Well, that's one of the things I think is so kind of unique and special about this place is they will teach you how to be a brewer.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. that's an experience I'm starting to come to understand that's not, you know, wholly unique around here. And how about you, Chad?
Yeah, I started like Jesse in the dairy industry. I was all fluid milk, so a lot of centrifuges, a lot of pasteurizers, a lot of CIPing of tanks. So like, that's kind of why the cellar kind of made a good fit for me. But I started out homebrewing about 15 years ago, and okay. It was just a really fun hobby. I liked it a lot. And my wife and I were kind of moving around because the company I was working for had me take a job transfer, and we wanted back into the Midwest, back into kind of this area, Wisconsin, that we really liked. And New Glarus was hiring at the time, and I was lucky enough to apply and get a 3-day interview. And yeah, what a great place to work. And I would say I knew very, very little about brewing, and I'd say I still know very, very little about brewing.
It is one of those topics that seems like the more you know, the less you know.
Yeah, for sure. So, but no, they've done a awesome, wonderful job of like teaching me and allowing me to learn and become a better brewer. But I was definitely interested in brewing before starting. So like they've kind of fed that interest, which I've really appreciated.
And so what year was that when you started?
I started here in 2016.
So you'd mentioned you had been homebrewing before that. I know there's probably a wide difference between, you know, sort of commercial brewing and homebrewing, but did you find like the learning curve to be a little less steep because of your homebrewing, or did you find more like, oh, I got to unlearn some tendencies here?
Luckily I work in the cellar. So most of my, job experience came from like the dairy experience I had, mm-hmm. because as far as the brewing stuff, I've had to unlearn a number of things, a number of assumptions you make because you read stuff by amateur brewers that just turns out not to be true. So, no, definitely unlearning. But lucky enough, my job here is very, similar in context to the job I had in the dairy industry.
I think that's really very cool and sort of like uniquely Wisconsin, where it's like, oh, what did these two brewers do before? We're both in the dairy industry, both working with cheese. Jesse, what kind of cheese were you making, by the way?
It was a Mexican style melting cheese. It was very close to Munster.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually the owner would take and make curds and take up to the market in Madison on Fridays.
Yeah.
So. And we also made some pepper jack, but it was still the same base cheese.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was pretty straightforward. It wasn't a bunch of different kinds or anything. So,
And how about you, Chad?
Well, I worked for Dean Foods, so I mainly did fluid milk. The closest thing we came to cheese was we made buttermilk.
We made buttermilk. That was
about the only cultured product we had.
Very cool. Well, when we're talking about learning here and we're talking about sort of going through your experience of growing your career here, one of the very interesting things is you both essentially got sent to Berlin to go to brewing school, right?
Yeah.
What was the brewing school called?
VLB, the full name. I'm sure I'd butcher it, so I'll just stick with VLB unless Chad wants to.
I would butcher it as well. It was
something long in German.
Yeah. It was like the technical school of brewing in Germany. Yeah.
So when did you guys get sent over to Germany?
We went in January of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
For their 2020 course. So it's a 6-month program. So we were scheduled to be there from January to July of 2020.
So this wasn't just like go over and learn a couple or take a couple of 2-week courses or something. This was a 6-month commitment to go to live in Berlin, basically.
Yep. It was a 6-month brewmaster certification course, essentially, that covered all aspects of brewing beer and running a brewery.
And how did this come about? How did this idea to send you two over to Germany come about?
I don't know. That'd be maybe a better question for Dan, I suppose. mm-hmm. I think they, and when I say they, I mean the brewery, I think they were interested in developing some guys who they saw potential in and who, you know, they saw, you know, could make, you know, potential good brewers in the future. And I think it was kind of an opportunity to like test the waters in that. They've always invested in the education of their brewers. You know, I know a number of guys here that have gone to Siebel's courses, and I'm blanking on the other one that guys would go to. But, you know, they've always spent time and money investing in the education of brewers here. And I think this was like that big next step of what if we really took a big investment into brewers and see what kind of, you know, payout that had on the future of their career here.
And so, Jesse, your day one, you're off the plane, you're in Berlin. Yep. What's that day like for you? What are you doing?
Kind of in an anxious state because... I'm a very small town guy, so I think my first flight was to Germany in 2018.
Yep.
So that would have been my second flight ever.
Wow.
So, you know, I think you can imagine where I was at with that. But it was also like a sense of adventure, you know, so you're kind of taking every moment, I suppose, as it comes. So it was kind of a weird feeling, I'll say.
Yeah, kind of like stepping off into Oz a little bit.
Yeah, but if you don't do that, then you never grow as a person. So it's important to do that.
So sort of, yeah, like accepting, like, I'm going to be a tad uncomfortable for just a little bit.
Very much so.
And then hopefully this will bloom into something, a good learning experience for me.
Yeah, and I would say within the first, I don't know, 3 weeks, the first 2 weeks were kind of rough, but then... after that, it was, you know, you kind of get settled in and get in a routine and things become more normal and you figure out the area you're in. And so,
yeah, it's really fun. It's funny how that works out, how something can, you know, sort of be so alien. And it seems like it's not going to get normalized for you. And the next thing you know, you're like, oh, there's my corner store. I walk down there. I got my German bread or my German snacks or whatever. Like the stuff you figure out that you like very quickly.
Yeah. And I had to find some distilled water. And, you know, around here, you can go to about any grocery store and just find, you know, distilled water. But over there, you actually have to go to like a health market.
Really?
It's a separate store, yeah, because they have, you know, carbonated water everywhere over there.
Oh, yeah, the Vasa McGas.
Yes. So, yeah, that was very interesting.
And how about you, Chad? Day one off the plane, how are you doing in Germany? What's going through your head?
You know, I had the opportunity to go a little early with my wife and two kids at the time. So we had been there for a little while doing some sightseeing before the class started. So it was super nice to have, you know, my family there at the start that helped me get like normalized, like, okay, they get to see where I'm going to be. There's things like we can talk about. They'll be familiar with the area when I talk to them on the phone. And then I think one of the things that really helped was Dan coming over with us at the beginning. Like he took us to the VLB, like, you know, we got to see the facility with him. And he got to talk to some people that obviously he knew, like some international colleagues of his. So, it was really cool that, you know, he was able to come over and kind of help us, settle in before the class started. Just kind of that familiar face of somebody like, oh, they all know Dan here.
Yeah.
You'll find that when you deal with the German brewers, they tend to all know who Dan Carey is.
They will be nice to me. This is my liaison here. They will now be nice to me because they know Dan.
Yeah. One of the funniest things we were in class. Do you remember when we saw the picture of Dan and Burkhardt in the workbook?
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
It's in the textbook.
Yes. Yeah.
That is super funny. Well, the reason I'm asking is because I'm just thinking about, like, it takes a certain amount of bravery. Like, of course, it's a great opportunity. You're going to learn a lot. You're going, you know, it's part of your job. And you're like, yep, this is how, you know, I can sort of advance and find my way. But at the same time, it's a tough proposition. It's, you know, you're talking 6 months, 6 months out of your life to go somewhere and learn something. So I do think it takes a certain amount of bravery to sign on for that, even when given the opportunity. So, you know, applaud you both for taking that step.
Yeah, I think we both recognize, you know, the opportunity that it was. And I, it was funny because I feel like Jesse and I both had our opportunity, like our moments of like, God, we just don't want to be here right now. And I know Jesse's yours was more at the beginning and mine was definitely more at the end. Mm-hmm. So it was nice. It was very smart of whoever made the decision to send two people, because we were definitely able to like feed off of each other and, you know, kind of help each other get through all of it.
Yeah. And kind of be a sense of a sense of normalcy for each other.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. We had that team there, you know.
Yep. And Chad and I, previous to going to the Brewmaster course, we had worked together on our Brewmax implementation, which is what essentially runs the entire Hilltop Brewery as far as brew house and cellar. So we spent some time together, and it wasn't like it. You know, some people work together and they don't see each other a whole lot.
Yeah.
Kind of already knew each other's tendencies. And so it was nice.
Yep.
So now you're starting your courses, you're doing your classes. How was that experience? What are you guys learning while you're over there? And we start with you, Jesse.
So essentially they covered, like I mentioned earlier, everything related to brewing beer and then running a brewery. You know, like here at the brewery, we sell to a distributor, mm-hmm. so we don't have to worry about logistics of shipping the beer or anything like that typically. Yeah. But that was one of the things they covered over there very lightly, but, you know, provided you with the information needed so that way you could look into it more. But things that we really heavily looked into were like barley before it's malt. Mm-hmm. And then we actually did a malting barley trial, and we actually malted some wheat. As a test, hops were another subject within the course that was intensely studied. And then just overall, you know, everything that from brew house and all the materials needed to start the process there, mm-hmm. to yeast, and then to in the cellar as far as fermentation control and everything like that. So.
So for you, Chad, you work in the cellar and you work in the brew hall, Jesse. Did you find that you guys were getting a lot of good cross education? So for you learning cellar stuff and for you learning sort of brew hall stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it was great cross education. Like, you know, if we're talking about, you know, brew hall stuff, like how, you know, these certain mash tuns work, it was easy to go to Jesse and be like, well, how does ours work? Like, how does this compare to what we do? Because that was, you know, the only basis I had, and Jesse knew that system inside out. So it was really easy to like bounce questions, or even if they were talking about something that to, you know, to me would be like, well, that's silly. Why do they do it that way? They should do it a different way. And it'd go to Jesse and he'd be like, well, they have to do it that way because of this. Like, oh, well, I didn't even think about that. So yeah, that makes sense.
The old, I've made that mistake before. Yeah. And here's why you don't do it that way.
Yeah. But yeah, it's like Jesse was talking about, the program was very comprehensive. They covered everything. I actually think it was split into three sections, and the first one was just malting, right? Yep. Like we covered the whole malting process, and then it moved into the brewing side, you know, the hot side brewing, and then the cold side brewing for the final. And you know, we were covering everything in there from these bottle washing machines that basically everyone has in Germany to, you know, looking at under microscopes at different, you know, micro, biological stuff. So it was a very, very comprehensive course. They covered a ton of topics in a relatively short period of time. So it was kind of go, go, go when we got there. It was one of the things that really helped, I think, us settle in was, you had class, you had lab, you had, you know, the technical stuff we would do hands on, and then you'd go home and sleep and come back the next day and do it all over again. So
it wasn't a whole lot of time for distraction.
No, it was an intense course.
So, and you sort of mentioned, the time frame here, January 2020. And I don't know, of the people listening out there, if that's going to strike any bells for them. But shortly thereafter, the world started sort of, for lack of a better term, falling apart. How did you guys find dealing with that starting to happen? And you're in Germany, and Chad, you mentioned you your wife and kids had come with you at the beginning, but they were back home now. And Jesse, I'm sure your family and friends are back here as well. Yep. So can you talk to a little bit about experiencing, I guess, the beginnings of a global pandemic while also being sort of in a foreign country?
Yeah, it was it was crazy to say the least. I remember, what was it, March? We had that trip planned for the class.
Yep.
And there was kind of these rumors rumbling around the school that, oh, this trip, they might end up canceling this trip because of this new, you know, virus that's going around. And everybody's kind of like, blah, no way they're going to cancel this trip. And then sure enough, like the next week, they were like, oh, this event is closed. They're closing all these other events. And everything just kind of cascaded all at once. I know my wife and kids were planning like a 3-week visit over her spring break. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the borders closed for coming back to America from Europe. So they decided, you know, she didn't want to risk getting stuck over in Europe. So they ended up having to cancel. And it was a unique experience, to say the least, to be in a foreign country while a whole global pandemic hits. But, you know, Jesse, if you want to speak, just jump in any time. But I know one of the things that was super helpful to us was the brewery was always in communication. Mm-hmm. They were always asking, like, you know, how's it going? They were all giving us advice like, hey, you know, maybe stay in, you know, find a mask if you can. Like, they were always there to try to, like, make sure we were safe and comfortable.
Yeah, and speaking of that, you know, starting out when we first got over there, we were meeting with Dan and everybody, a few folks, weekly, I believe, with, mm-hmm. with if we had any questions related to the course or if we needed anything. So it was super nice to have that kind of support back home. But then speaking back to, as you mentioned, everything kind of cascaded at once. I don't know if you remember, Chad, but when they shut school down, it happened so fast, they weren't even quite prepared to do the online course. Yep. So we kind of had to sit in a holding pattern for a week.
Yeah.
And that was pretty interesting, because then essentially the whole city of Berlin locked down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the lockdown over there was a little more intense than here.
Yeah. A little more unified of this is what we're all doing right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It happened very fast. So.
Well, that's an interesting point where it's like, on the one hand, it's like everything is sort of up in the air. That's very unsettling. But on the other hand, it's not like you're in a place where it's like, oh man, I really want to go out into my favorite restaurant, or I really want. It's like I'm here for one thing, to do one purpose, and now I guess I'm locked in a room to do that one thing for that one purpose.
Yeah,
yeah. I think we should say that the course was taught in English. And my German was not very good at the time.
So has it improved?
Not really.
My German wasn't good at the time. It's not great now either.
But, so yeah, that also made it interesting, you know, trying to go out grocery shopping and stuff like that. But I think we got by.
Well, that's the fun. I always talked to Dan about this a little bit, like in Germany and in Italy, if you don't know the language very well, you can get hollered at fairly quickly in both of those countries.
That did happen too.
Yeah, it'll happen. And the masks made it interesting. Trying to communicate through a mask in a different language was difficult. But you know, going back to like the pandemic, like when it started and everything and how it affected us, like Jesse said, they weren't prepared to like do an online course. This was all like one of the benefits of this course is just very hands-on. It's very in person. They do a lot of like technical parts for the training. And when the school shut down, they kind of scrambled. And a week later, they started these virtual classes, but we still didn't know, like, is this going to stay permanent? Are we going to like recover and go back to school soon? And I think it was like late March, really early April, they decided, you know what, it's just going to go virtual for the next 6 weeks. And we don't know what's going to happen after them. You guys might have to come back next year to do the technical training. And the brewery is great, because they were like, you know what, if they're just going to do it online, let's just get you guys home. So that in case something happens over there, you guys are at least home and safe and everything's good. So we actually ended up coming back. And I don't know if people know, there's a 7-hour time difference between Berlin and our area, Wisconsin. So we ended up getting up at 3 a.m. for classes online
For those
6 weeks.
Yeah. So you were home, but you're sort of like
on a different sleep schedule than everybody else. So we'd do classes from like 3 a.m. till noon. And then work on like our papers and stuff after that, our studying for the exams. And then eventually the course decided, like, these are the conditions we can reopen under and get you guys in to do your practical work this year. So we ended up flying back mid-May and kind of completing the course over there. But yeah, it was an intense time. It was bizarre and weird, and but it worked out because we both did well in the course. We both took advantage of it, and we learned a lot.
Yep.
So now you're back, and you're back in New Glarus after your time in Berlin. What sort of stuff are you now, like, because it's weird when you take a course and you spend that much time just sort of studying one thing in an intense sort of way. It's not like you're on your conscious level going, oh, I'm going to apply this today. You know what I mean? But as things come up, you know, it just sort of sparks in you and you go, oh, I know about this now. Did you find that start happening to you guys when you went back to work full time just at the brewery here?
Yeah, I would say, yeah. I mean, I think one of the things they challenged us with when we went over was like, hey, pay attention, like, during the course about things that you could apply when you get back. So I know, like, we came back and the whole COVID thing was still happening. So there was a little bit of delay to some of that. But, you know, by December, I think both of us were, presenting these ideas that we had of like, hey, while we were in school, they talked about this. Maybe we can apply it in this way. And we both got the opportunity to, like, sit down with Dan and some technical brewers and say, like, hey, you know, we learned about, for instance, one of the things was yeast vitality testing. And, you know, maybe it would be really interesting to, like, start up a program here that deals with that, because it could be some added benefit. So they definitely challenged us to try to, like, you know, take advantage of what we were learning and apply it when we came back. And then, yeah, coming back and, you know, getting back into brewing again, it kind of was like, oh, we learned about this in school and this is the way we do, you know, whatever, a YDO. I guess they were right. Like, this is how we were supposed to do it. And then other things, it was like, oh, maybe we should try it a different way. You know, they talked about doing things, you know, this way in Germany. So, I don't know if Jesse, you want to speak to any more of that?
Yeah. I mean, I think overall the brewery does a really good job in teaching brewers.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I feel like if you go, like, I've been to, I think it was 2016 or 2017, myself and, two other folks from in the brewery went down to the Siebel course. Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a 2-week concise course. And, you know, when you're talking to people, they were kind of amazed at, like, some of the things that you knew, you know, well, all that was, you know, I was taught within the brewery. Whereas maybe in some other areas or other breweries, you know, it's not as in depth.
Mm-hmm.
It's more so, this is how it's done.
Yeah, this is your little is your little corner of it, and this is how we do it in your little corner of it.
But yeah, with the brew house stuff, when I come back, it kind of just gave me more of a what's the word I'm looking for? It gave me more assurance that I could make a good decision on if we were having a issue with something, or it allowed me to feel more comfortable speaking ideas or.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe coming up with a better way to save some time within the process. Cause the brew house is very on time, on target.
Yeah.
You need to stay on track. So every minute matters.
Well, I mean, and that's a great point, that you raised there about these sort of continuing education, you know, opportunities and making sure that that gets fostered in people and not just in this industry, but in all of them. It is the idea that, you know, the investment is worth it because when you have a heightened level of comfort in what you do, a heightened level of comfort in what you know. And like I said, it's not like every day you're going in going, okay, what did I learn from Germany that I'm going to bring to work today? But when you get that comfort level, as things come up, the connections just get fired that much quicker. And not only that, but you just have that level to say, oh, I'm comfortable going, this is how I think we should fix this now. Or this is how I think this is going right now. Or this is how I think we could tweak this now. You know, that sort of thing.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, I think it definitely made us more confident brewers.
Yeah, there you go.
We felt like we learned a lot and we could apply it. And it was nice being empowered to do that. That is one of the things the brewery does, is they definitely empower people who are interested in learning and growing to make strides and advancements towards their goals. So, yeah, that was probably the biggest benefit of going, was just becoming a more confident brewer.
Yeah.
Oh, that is totally awesome. And so I think we've covered your guys' time in Berlin and your jobs here. I don't have a listener question this week, but I have a personal question I like to ask when people go over to Germany. And I understand you didn't have much time for the social aspect of Germany, and then, you know, it got shut down. Did you each have a favorite beer you liked while you were over there?
So I can't remember the exact brewery, but I'm a big fan of Helles.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's simple. Pilsners. The Pilsners over there were a little bit bitter for me, but the Helles was right on target.
That was right in your sweet spot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had the opportunity, like I said, to go a little early with my family, and it's not a German beer, but we were able to go down to the Pilsner Aquell Brewery.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And we did the tour, and we got to go in there, you know, ancient cellar. I can't remember how old it was, 300 years or something.
Yeah.
And when you do that, they give you, you know, a nice hazy beer off one of their lagering tanks down in the cellar, and drinking that beer down in the Pilsner Quell cellar was a very cool beer moment, which, you know, brings up a funny thing. I remember talking to Dan about that story. And maybe for one of your podcasts, he can tell his experience, because he has a crazy cool story about visiting Pilsner Quell back when it was still blocked off.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Really cool story.
That's awesome. Well, thank you guys for your time. I really do appreciate it. And yeah.
Well, thanks, Scott. Yeah, this was fun.
Yeah. Thanks, Scott.
Totally painless, right?
Totally. Sure. Totally painless.
You guys have a good day.
Thanks, you too.